We're going to be studying from verses 1 through 5, or at least we're going to be using that as the basis of our study this evening. It's good to see everyone here this evening. It's good to have those of you who are visiting. We have some who are visiting this morning who are back tonight. And of course, I guess some of you we may call visitors, but you're really not. You know, you're part of the family here in one way or another. We see you quite often, and we do appreciate you and appreciate you coming and being with us when you can. I know that some of you live out of the area and you're here visiting, but we hope that we can make you feel at home. We appreciate you coming and being with us. Those of you who are in the area, live in the area, who are visiting with us tonight, we appreciate very much your coming. And if there are questions that you have about the lessons that are preached here or about anything that you see practiced, any question at all, please feel free to ask someone about those things. We want to study the Scriptures. We want to examine what they say and follow them. So we encourage you to ask any questions that you have. By the way, the only foolish question that you ask is the one that you do not ask. So we encourage you to ask questions, take advantage of the opportunity. We do want to study with you. We want to answer your questions. Tonight we're going to be thinking about preaching, the work of preaching. I know a lot of folks have misconceptions about the work of a preacher. I remember when Michael was still in grade school, he had a teacher. He had gotten in trouble. And so she was going to call his daddy. And he looked at her with those pretty blue eyes and said, "You don't want to call my daddy." And she said, "Why not?" And he says, "Well, he's busy doing the Lord's work." Well, it wasn't long. A teacher was wanting one of the parents to come and engage and volunteer for some kind, I think it was popping popcorn in this particular instance. So Michael quickly volunteered his daddy. And in this instance, of course, all of my daddy does is sit at the office and play on the computer all day long. So got a little different story there. But some folks have different perceptions about what preachers do and the kind of work that they do. And many of the things we're going to be talking about tonight are more of the unpleasant variety, but I assure you the work of the preacher and the goodness, the quality, the pleasant things of preaching far outweigh the negatives. And we want to try to examine some of these things just to let you know a little bit regarding the work of the preacher. Again, our text, 2 Timothy chapter 4, verses 1 through 5. "I charge you, therefore, before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who will judge the living and the dead at His appearing in His kingdom, preach the word. Be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, exhort with all longsuffering and teaching." Now we can see right here in these first two verses of 2 Timothy chapter 4. First of all, you have a charge. You have a commitment, a responsibility that's placed upon the preacher. You have a charge, a divine charge. And I am responsible as a gospel preacher to my Lord, to my God. Not to men. Now, I'm responsible to men only in the sense that I am to preach to them the truth, tell them the truth, and try to encourage them to obey the truth. But other than that, my responsibility is to the Lord. And I am to serve Him. That is where my charge comes from. And that is my responsibility. And I am to preach the Word. This covers the material that I'm supposed to be presenting. Now, there are those who believe that in order to preach the Word, I mean, you have to only speak in terms and words from the Scripture. And basically, somehow the idea that all you can do is get up and read the text. And that's not what it means to preach the Word, is it? To preach the Word means to explain the Word. As in Ezra's case, when Ezra stood up and read from the Old Law, you had other people who went around to the people and they gave the sense of the reading. And that's what preachers are to do. They're to preach the Word. They are to proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ and give a sense of the reading. And that's what we are to do. Preach the Word. I've seen a cartoon. The picture is, you have all of these people coming out of the church building, and the preacher is standing there greeting everyone's hands, and this one lady comes up and says, "It sure would have been nice if you'd had a sermon with your illustration." And that's the way it is with a lot of preachers today. Their whole sermon is nothing but a big illustration. That's not preaching the Word. use illustrations to explain the Word, to help people understand what the Word says. That would be preaching the Word. But if you have to have a little passage here or there to uphold an illustration, you've got it backwards. So the responsibility is to preach the Word and to be ready in season and out of season. Preach it when they want it, preach it when they don't. When they like it, when they don't like it. When they're hungry for it, when they're not hungry for it. You preach the Word in season and out of season. And this is what you do. You convince. You rebuke. You exhort with all long-suffering and teaching. Well, that's basically the work of a preacher right there. To be ready in season and out of season. Convince, rebuke, and exhort. You convince by the giving of evidence, the scriptural evidence. You rebuke by correcting those who are in sin and preaching against it. And you exhort by encouraging them, okay, just like Nathan did to David. Okay, he convicted him, didn't he? He rebuked him, didn't he? Thou art the man. And then he exhorted him, this is what you need to do. And he encouraged him to do it. And that's the work of a preacher. Goes on in verse 3, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but according to their own desires, because they have itching ears, they will heap up for themselves teachers. And they will turn their ears away from the truth and be turned to fables, aside to fables. We see that today. The apostles had to deal with that. The first century gospel preachers had to deal with it. Timothy, for example. We have to deal with it today. There are many people in the world today, in fact, most people in the world today, do not want the gospel. They are not satisfied with the preaching of the gospel. What they want is something that makes them feel good. They want something that tickles their ears. That's exactly what the Apostle Paul is talking about here. The Apostle Paul is condemning, right here in this passage, what we see so often on television and on the radio. He is condemning that kind of preaching. And the idea is that, look, you need to preach the Word because the truth of the matter is there are going to be people who don't want it. But you need to preach it anyway. And the time is coming when they will fall away from the truth because they don't want it. And he goes on, but you be watchful in all things. You have a responsibility. You be watchful in all things. Endure afflictions. There's going to be problems. Do the work of an evangelist. You must do the work no matter what's going on outside around you. And you must fulfill your ministry. You have a responsibility. You carry that out and you don't let anybody get in your way. That's the charge that the Apostle Paul gave to Timothy. Well, that passage right there pretty well sums up the work of a preacher. It's a very important text that we all need to understand. What is the work of a preacher? To convince, rebuke, and exhort with all long-suffering and doctrine. And be watchful in all things. You have to be careful. You have to watch yourself. And you have to endure afflictions. There's going to be persecution. And do the work. It is work, by the way. If an evangelist is doing his work, it's work. And fulfill your ministry. But what are some unpleasant things about preaching? You know, the Apostle Paul encountered sin. Everywhere he went, when he went to Athens in Acts chapter 17... as he was walking through the city of Athens, what did he see? He saw idols. Idols everywhere. And there was even an idol that was set up to the unknown God. Paul encountered idolatry in almost every city that he went. And of course, associated with idolatry, you had fornication and you had adultery. You had all kinds of sins, sorcery and that kind of thing. And the Apostle Paul encountered that. Well, we encounter that today. In fact, you know, the United States of America is becoming a mission field, if you will. Many parts of the United States is like Sodom and Gomorrah. You have Las Vegas. You have places in the United States where there's not a church of the Lord for hundreds of miles. Sin is everywhere. Sin is at every corner. 1 John chapter 5 and verse 19, the Apostle John there makes that point. We know that we are of God and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. And that's the way it seems sometimes. It seems as everyone is taken away by the world. And you're really, really fighting an uphill battle. It's not easy. People enjoy sin too much. That's a battle that a preacher has to face.
immodesty, lies, drunkenness, murder, fornication. Everywhere you look, you have television, you have the internet, you have the mall, you have school, you have work. Where can you go? Where can you go where these things are totally absent? It's gotten to where you can't even go to the house of God and these things be totally absent. The preacher has an uphill work. We are tempted to say, what's the use? Of course, elders, by the way, have a job here as well. We are tempted to say, what's the use? I mean, why try? Let's go somewhere where, you know, you're preaching to the choir. Now, that is a temptation sometimes. Go where people want to hear the truth, where people love the truth. But you know, the preacher's responsibility is to preach the word whether people want it or not, wherever you have the opportunity. We're tempted to say, what's the use? We teach on the radio. We get people listening. We know that there are people listening. But sometimes it just seems like not enough. Not enough are tuning in. Not enough are responding. You wonder sometimes, what's the use? Well, I do believe it's very profitable. I believe we're getting a lot of good responses. But I wish things would go faster. I wish that we had this building full every time we met. I wish that we were converting people off the street, right and left. It's not happening. And sometimes you wonder, what's the use? You're fighting sin. That's the problem, really, because people are consumed by it. And they don't want to give it up. They have been so overwhelmed by the teaching that's out there in the world. Oh, sin doesn't make that big. You know, God is going to forgive you. God's a loving, merciful God. And so many people have bought into that idea that He is so merciful and so loving that He's not going to hold you accountable for your sin. God is loving. God is merciful. That's why He sent His Son. And I assure you, I promise you, He will hold you accountable for your sin. Because when you sin, you sin against Christ, the one who died for you. You count the blood that He shed on the cross as something that is common, that you do not hold it in proper regard. I guarantee you, He's going to hold you accountable for that. But we're tempted to say, what's the use? Few hear the gospel. Few will listen. Few study. Jesus said it would be like this in Matthew chapter 22, verse 14. For many are called, but few are chosen. Many hear the gospel. Many hear it, but few obey it. There are few that are saved. In Luke, the 13th chapter, verses 24 and 25, strive to enter through the narrow gate, for straight, for many, I say to you, will seek to enter and will not be able. When once the master of the house has risen up and shut the door, and you begin to stand outside and knock at the door, saying, Lord, Lord, open for us, and He will answer and say to you, I do not know you. Where are you from? It'll be too late, is the idea. And a lot of folks, they're waiting. Today is not their convenient season to obey and follow the Lord. They're waiting. And one of these days, the door is going to be shut and they're not going to be able to enter in. And I hope that you're not in that state. The gospel is being proclaimed in your hearing. And you need to obey it while you have opportunity. Few hear and few obey. You know, there are those who listen. We have listeners on the radio. We have people who listen every day. We have callers who call in. Many of our callers, though, recently especially, are not calling to discuss the Scriptures per se. They're calling just for the sake, just to try to find some chink in our armor. That's all they're trying to do. They're testing us. And they're doing that trying to discredit us. Many are out to do just that. They're not really interested. They listen, but they're not learning to obey. And there are some who learn. They're interested and they come maybe and they listen. They come for a few weeks and they listen to the gospel preached. And they study. They take CDs home. They take materials home. And they'll go and they'll read it. But then they won't truly commit to the Lord. They will not come to Him completely. They come, but they lose interest. You know, Jesus Christ Himself, there's not a more loving, more gentle, preacher that's ever lived. He was gentle. But you know what his disciples told him in Matthew the 15th chapter after he had given this scathing rebuke of the scribes and Pharisees, said that their doctrine was of the commandments and teachings of men. His disciples pulled him aside and says, "Don't you know that your preaching offended them?" We have brethren like that today. When preachers get up and preach the truth, and they preach it in such a way that, yes, people who are of denominational persuasion, backgrounds, yes, they're convicted. Yes, they recognize the distinction between truth and error. They see it. And brethren come up and say, "Well, don't you know that they might have been offended by what you said?" Ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you something. Your preacher gets up and preaches, and he knows that there are people in the audience who are denominational in their beliefs. And you are preaching on something that has to do with denominationalism. And when you get done, they don't know the difference between the truth and error. They don't know what the church is. When you get done, they cannot understand that they're in error. Something's wrong with your preaching. And that's not my fault, friend, that they would be offended. It's the truth's fault. If I'm preaching the truth and they're offended at truth, it's not my fault. It's the truth's fault. You're not going to speak against the truth, are you? But Jesus Christ Himself preached with power, preached with love. And people were offended by that. In fact, they were so offended they nailed Him to a cross. So few hear the gospel, and we need to realize that and understand it. And another distasteful thing regarding preaching is indifferent members. Indifference is plaguing the church. It has for a long time. Turn in your Bibles to Revelation chapter 3. Jesus says, "I know your works, that you are neither cold nor hot. I could wish you were cold or hot. So then, because you are lukewarm and neither cold nor hot, I will vomit you out of my mouth." This is nothing new. The church at Laodicea was lukewarm. It was indifferent. So, not surprising that brethren today would be lukewarm and indifferent, especially in the environment in which we live. I mean, we live in a luxurious society, don't we? We live in a microwave society. Women don't have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and go and, you know, prepare breakfast for the family like they did several years ago. Have everything ready so that when the sun came up, everyone could get their breakfast and get out in the field and go to work. No, we can get up and throw a few sausage and biscuits into the microwave, heat them up for 35 seconds, and boom, you're done. Things are different. We can sit down and we can watch TV and get all the information that we want right there on Fox News in the mornings. Listen to our radio as we're driving to work in our air-conditioned cars, going 70 miles an hour down the interstate. And, it's not quite like it used to be. And we live in a different culture, a different society. Times have changed. And you know, in Laodicea, they lived in a luxurious lifestyle for that time. And it had an effect on the people. They became indifferent. There are so many things that distract Christians today. We need to be aware of them. We need to be concerned. Jesus said, "But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life." No, the carousing, the drunkenness, those things are sinful in and of themselves. But what about the cares of this life? Well, we can become so weighed down with the cares of this life, things that are not wrong or sinful in and of themselves, that we lose focus, that we become indifferent towards our spiritual things, our spiritual life. We need to be aware that spiritual things must come first in our life and make them so. It is discouraging when brethren will not study, will not give, and will not attend. That's discouraging to a preacher. Discouraging. Brethren who will not study, who will not go home and take notes during the lessons, because the preacher, to be honest with you, a lot of people expect the preacher to be done in 30 minutes. And I've never been done, I don't think, in 30 minutes, but I recognize that people, brethren, want the sermon done in a short period of time. Well, many of the lessons that are presented, most of the lessons that are presented, they have a lot of passages in them that I do not have time to read in 45 minutes. We'd be here for an hour and a half if I were to do that, but I'm trying to present the material. or get the material out there so that you can go home and study it on your own. And I know that brethren don't take advantage of that opportunity sometimes. We need to. We need to study the Scriptures daily. We need to study on our own. We need to study certain things out. If you have questions, you need to study them out. We need to be people of the book. And it's discouraging when brethren do not know the Scriptures as you hope that they would. I mean, you work, you preach, you present material, hoping that brethren will read and study, and too often, brethren don't do that. And when it comes to attendance, it's discouraging to the Bible class teachers when we're not here, when we're late, discouraging. It's discouraging to the preacher to look at empty pews. When you know that brethren, you know, ought to be here. Now certainly there are some things that prevents us from being here beyond our control. We understand that. And I certainly try not to judge anyone on that basis. And I don't question. But brethren, you need to think about that. And not for the preacher's sake, but for the Lord's sake. For your sake. Indifference is a dangerous thing. Is it any wonder that few preach? It's difficult to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. There are so many preachers out there, I made mention of this morning, who are preaching in small congregations. And they have secular jobs to support themselves. They have to, because the congregations where they're preaching can't support them. Not only that, but congregations, generally speaking, around the country are unable to support them for various reasons. And you know, it would be great if we were really bursting at the seams, where we had members just piling the money in so that we could help these gospel preachers who are out there who need our support. That'd be wonderful. But indifference stops, puts a dead halt on much of that. We need to be more zealous in our attendance, in our giving, in our studying. Critics, objectors, and compromisers. There are always going to be critics. You know what? I don't care who you are. I don't care what profession you're in. I don't care what you're doing. You're not going to make everybody happy. This is the bottom line. I don't know too many folks who have lived in such a way and carried on their profession that in which they have made everybody happy all the time. But there have always been critics to gospel preachers. Paul had them. Galatians chapter 2, we read of those Judaizing teachers. We read of those individuals who opposed the Apostle Paul, who stood up against him, who tried to stop his work over and over and over and over again. The Apostle Paul wrote about such people. Barnabas and Peter compromised with the Judaizers. You know, that was troublesome. Boy, that really is discouraging when you have fellow workers in the kingdom of God to compromise their faith and allow error to proceed unchecked. Demas in 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 10 tried to stop the work. He would not accept Paul. He constantly tried to and going back to the world, of course, he forsook the Apostle Paul. Let him down. That's what that word forsake means, by the way. He let Paul down. Demas returned to the world, 2 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 10. Alexander was an enemy of the Apostle Paul, 2 Timothy 4 and verse 14. Now, there are so many who have fought against gospel preachers. The Apostle Paul is a good example. The Judaizers criticized Paul, objected to his instruction everywhere he went. They followed him from town to town, poisoning the minds of the people to whom he preached. They wanted to stop the work. 3 John in verse 9, Diotrephes put a hindrance on John's work. You know what? We cannot allow them to stop. Nehemiah chapter 6, verses 2 and 3, Sambalot, they tried to stop the Hebrew people from rebuilding the walls of Jerusalem. They didn't let them stop them. We cannot allow the enemies of God to stop the preaching of the gospel. And by the way, you know what? That really does irritate me. I'm on some of these lists I've mentioned before, discussing things, various things, with different gospel preachers. It really does irritate me when these preachers get on there and they're trying to defend some denominational doctrine, especially the idea of denominationalism, like I talked about last week. Just really irritates me. Denominationalism. Why don't we just compromise and let's say, oh yeah, the Church of Christ is just another denomination. Why don't we do that? What good is that going to do? What good is it going to do to surrender the truth regarding the church and become like all the other denominations? What good is that going to do? Friend, that's ridiculous. You do not gain ground for truth by compromising with error. It's never worked and it never will work. We cannot allow them to stop progress. We must continue to preach and stand for the truth of God. Worldliness in the church. Another discouraging thing. Oh, by the way, there's one other point regarding critics, objectors, and compromisers. In Ezekiel, the second chapter, in verse 6, it says, "And you, son of man, do not be afraid of them, nor be afraid of their words, though briars and thorns are with you, and you dwell among scorpions. Do not be afraid of their words or dismayed by their looks, though they are a rebellious house. You shall speak my words to them, whether they hear or whether they refuse, for they are rebellious." Ezekiel had a mission. Whether they refused, they were like thorns. They were like briars. They were like scorpions. To preach anyway. And that's what must be done. Worldliness in the church. Paul was troubled by sin in the church. 2 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 4. The Apostle Paul made that very clear. These were his converts, his friends. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 2 and verse 4, "For out of much affliction and anguish of heart I wrote to you with many tears, not that you should be grieved, but that you might know the love which I have so abundantly for you." Why would he be in tears? It's because they had sinned. They had allowed the world into the church at Corinth that he wrote about in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. And it hurt him deeply to know that the world had gotten into the church to that extent. And he was deeply concerned about the churches. It was on his mind daily. Reproof is very unpleasant. Rebuking is not something that's fun to do. Negative sermons have never been fun to preach. Never. But that's something that the preacher is called to do. There is no getting around that if you're going to do the work of a preacher. In Galatians chapter 4, verse 16. Galatians 4 and verse 16. "Have I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth?" Many, many preachers have become enemies of individuals to whom they spoke the truth. Spoke the truth in love, kindness, gentleness. But because they spoke the truth, they became an enemy of the sinner. Everyone will not listen to you. And worldliness, when worldliness gets in the church, I tell you what, it's hard to get out, and rebuking it does not make friends, usually. Such rebuke, though, is done for the church's sake. It's done for the church's sake because we need to keep the church pure. We need to keep the world out of the church. We must keep the world out of the church or we are destined to fail as a local congregation. In 2 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 12, "Therefore, although I wrote to you, I did not do it for your sake of him, or for the sake of him who had done the wrong, nor for the sake of him who suffered wrong, but that our care for you in the sight of God might appear to you." It's for their sake. In 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 6, this goes back to the case of the fornicating brother. "Your glorying is not good. Do you not know that a little leaven leavens the whole lump?" Don't you know that? Discipline is important. It's necessary if the church is going to be strong. Without discipline, the church will not be strong. It will become weak and it will die. You must have this. You must have commitment. By the way, I heard something this morning on television I thought was a good point. You know what? When commitment is expected from the leaders of a congregation, when commitment is expected and members are required to be committed, you're only asking for the benefit, for the good of that church. That's all you're doing. But when leaders allow people to become uncommitted and allow that to continue on, all in the world you're doing is asking for trouble. Brethren, we need to be committed. The members need to be committed. And when we allow them to be uncommitted and not say anything or do anything about that, not only are we asking for trouble for the church, we're going to let them drift away. They will lose their soul. Something we need to think about. It's done for the church's sake. We need to get the world out of the church. Brethren need to be more committed. But let's turn to some more positive things. There is not a greater work in the world. I want to tell you right now, the President of the United States of America has an important job. But there is no more important job than preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. There's nothing more important than that. Nothing. It is the most important work in all of the world. Nothing, nothing is in comparison with it. It is more important than livelihood or making a living. It's more important than doing what, you know, just getting out there and whatever occupation you may, you can name the occupation. You can name the field. There's nothing more important than preaching. It is more important than burial. Jesus, in fact, as we looked at this passage this morning, let me go first and bury my Father. Wait a minute. The gospel is more important, friend. It's more important. It's more important than service. In Acts chapter 6 and verse 2, the Grecian widows were being neglected in the daily ministration. So the apostles told them to select 7 men from among them to be dedicated to this work. Why didn't the apostles do this? Because they had more important work to do. What was that? To preach the gospel. It's more than life itself. In Acts chapter 20, verse 4, more important than life itself. You know, in the book of Acts, we see the Apostle Paul often risking his life to preach the gospel. And that's exactly what we see, Acts 20 and verse 24. There the Apostle Paul says, "But none of these things move me, nor do I count my life dear to myself, so that I may finish my race with joy in the ministry which I received from the Lord Jesus to testify to the gospel of the grace of God." My life is not dear to me. It's more important than your own life. Preach the gospel. There is great satisfaction in knowing that what you're doing as a gospel preacher is the greatest, most important work in all the world. There's satisfaction, a great deal of satisfaction in that. And when you keep that in perspective, you can realize and come to realize the importance of it. And it certainly helps get you over all the unpleasant things of preaching. There is nothing more important than that. By the way, the work of the preacher. Preachers are to preach the gospel for the express purpose of trying to save men's souls. Their souls are valuable. There's nothing more valuable in all of the world than the soul. There's nothing more important. And something else. The preacher's work is not done alone. He's not alone in what he does. In Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13, the Apostle Paul says, "I can do all things through Christ who strengtheneth me." And certainly the same thing can be said for each and every one of us. We can all do the things that the Lord has told us to do. But especially the gospel preacher who is in fact preaching the Word, who is standing firm on the truth. You know what? The Lord's with him. The Lord will continue to be with him. In Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 15,
Therefore, by Him let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise to God, that is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to His name.
Let us continually do that. You know what? When we are serving the Lord, guess what? He is going to be there. Going back up to verse 8, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday, today, and forever. What does that mean? In the context, what does that mean? He means that He is going to stand behind those. He is going to defend those. He will be with those who are with Him. He's not going to forsake you. He will never leave you. And the preacher, when he's preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, he needs to understand this. The Lord will be with him. Matthew chapter 28, verses 18 through 20. That last sentence, that very last sentence, of course, backing up to verse 18, all power is given to me in heaven and earth. Go ye therefore and teach all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Brother Lowell Blassingame told me one time, that's why he didn't fly. He said, the Lord said, I will be with you lo, I will be with you always, not high. So he wouldn't fly. But the idea is, of course, the Lord will be with the preacher as he preaches the truth. We are vessels put to use in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 7. Earthen vessels. The apostles, of course, were the earthen vessels in which carried the gospel. And they preached it, and they wrote it down. And of course, as we carry the message today, as we carry what is written, and we preach it, we teach it, then our vessels are being put to use. Our bodies are being put to use for the Lord. And the Lord is glorified in that. And certainly the Lord will be with us. Whatever we may accomplish, it is to His glory and not our own. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, 2 Corinthians chapter 5, chapter 12, verses 5 through 10, the Apostle Paul says, of such a one I will boast, yet of myself I will not boast, except in my infirmities. For though I might desire to boast, I will not be a fool. For I will speak the truth, but I refrain lest anyone should think of me above what he sees me to be or hears from me. And lest I should be exalted above measure by the abundance of revelation, a thorn in the flesh was given to me, a messenger of Satan, to buffet me, lest I be exalted above measure. Concerning this thing, I pleaded with the Lord three times that it might depart from me, and He said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I will rather boast in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in needs, in persecutions, in distress, for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong. When we stand and preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, I understand something. Men may think I'm weak. Men may think I'm a fool. Men may persecute me. Men may cause all kinds of trouble for me in my life. I may not make as much money as I would like to make. I may not be able to pay all of my bills on a timely fashion and have a great inheritance laid up for my children. And I may not have a great retirement fund. But I will tell you this, I'm glorifying Jesus Christ, and I have my reward laid up in heaven. That I know. There are unpleasant things regarding preaching. Most of them have to do, of course, all of them have to do with sin. Because it's prevalent, because it's here, people do not want to hear the gospel. People are indifferent. They'd rather be engaged in worldly things than spiritual things. There are critics and objectors, and those are the people who are engaged in sin. They want to do what they want to do. They don't want to do what the Lord wants them to do. And worldliness, of course, is in the church. And that's something that every preacher and elders have to deal with. But there are pleasant things, too. It's the most important work in the world. There is nothing more important. And the presence of Jesus Christ, He is with me. He's with every gospel preacher. He's with everyone who stands with Him and for Him. He's there. He will never, ever forsake me. And I know that. But you know something else, is that you're working with the greatest people on earth. Now, I'll tell you something that's sad. I have seen, personally, brethren not act like they ought to act. And brethren have treated preachers in ways that they shouldn't have treated. I have never personally been treated that way, and I am so thankful and lucky from the standpoint that I have not faced that. And I'm thankful to God because He's blessed me in that way. But I will say this. I know some brethren who have been mistreated, and it's sad. But you know what? Just because brethren don't act like they ought to act all the time, we should never allow that to sour us on brethren who are doing what they ought to do. And I have had the blessing of working with some of the greatest people on God's earth. And it's a wonderful thing to know that you're working with people who love the Lord, who want to do what's right, who are committed to do what's right. There are always those people. Yes, there are those who are going to continue in sin. They're going to be indifferent members. They're going to be critics and objectors. But there are also those who hold up your hands, who encourage you, who push you on and upward. There are those who are there when you need them, and there are those who are there even when you don't want them. They're there. There is nothing like working with brethren who love the Lord. It's not a greater experience, not a greater profession, not a greater thing. Yes, there are some things that aren't so pleasant about preaching. It's not an easy work when you consider everything that's involved. Preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine, for the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine. And boy, isn't that the case. But there are those who want to hear the truth. There are those who love the truth. And you can see that, and you know what? You can be comforted, and you can know that there are people, because of your efforts, because of your labors, there are people who will go to heaven when they die. And there is nothing, there is not a greater joy than that. The Apostle Paul experienced that joy. I've experienced that joy, and I know what it's like to know that you have been instrumental in bringing someone to the Word of God. And they've obeyed it, and they have that hope of heaven. The Apostle Paul told Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 4, verses 12 through 16, "Let no one despise your youth, but be an example to the unbelievers in word and conduct and love and spirit and faith and purity. Till I come, give it attention to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. Do not neglect the gift that is in you, which was given to you by prophecy with the laying on of the hands of the eldership. Meditate on these things. Give yourself entirely to them, that your progress may be evident to all. Take heed to yourself and to the doctrine. Continue in them." Notice it didn't say anything about a fire truck baptistry in there. "Continue in them, for in doing this you will save both yourself and them that hear you." That's what it's all about, friend. That's what it's all about. Preaching the truth, continuing to preach the truth, so that people can know what the truth is and they can go to heaven when they die. Maybe you're here tonight, you're not a Christian. If you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, why not now? Why not tonight? Why not come to Him and submit your will to His will? If you are a Christian, you've obeyed the gospel, you've been baptized into Him, but you're not living as you should, make that right as well. Take advantage of the opportunity that you have tonight to serve the Lord. Won't you come together with us?